Coming up, it's a fighting tech news today. Microsoft's fighting Apple. Yahoo's fighting Gmail. Facebook is fighting democracy. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, December 11th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TNT. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT12. And they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the Pong News Views world. The Instagram-Twitter war heated up as Twitter introduced a new feature allowing users to apply filters to photos. Twitter got 8 filters from Aviary, a photography editing company, and will add them to the official Twitter mobile apps for iOS and Android.
Marissa Meyer proudly announced a revamp to Yahoo Mail on Yahoo's blog. Now, Yahoo's introduced new iPhone, Android, and Windows 8 mail apps. The web version of Yahoo Mail will get a refresh over the next few days. According to Yahoo Mail and Messenger GM Vivek Sharma, the new Yahoo Mail will save 36 million minutes every day for its users by tweaking the underlying performance.
I have that many minutes in my day?
All the users.
Wow. Oh, not just me.
Not just Tom Snow.
Good news for lovers of wine and Facebook, also known as Sarah Lane. Facebook Gifts is now available for everyone in the United States just in time for the holidays. Facebook Gifts came out in September but was not accessible by all users until now. Along with the universal rollout, Facebook also added a collection of wine to its gift options. I'm on Facebook, just saying.
Wine isn't an emulator. The Next Web reports that Apple and Microsoft are currently locked in a squabble over SkyDrive. It boils down to this. Apple won't let Microsoft update its SkyDrive iOS app unless Microsoft agrees to pay 30% of the revenue its new SkyDrive app would generate. Microsoft sells extra storage for its SkyDrive service, but that is not in the current version of the iOS app.
Ah, the year is truly drawing to a close, ladies and gentlemen. Get ready for all the year-in-review features, starting with the year on Twitter. Twitter unveiled its annual look back at things you remember happened already, like the U.S. presidential election and the Olympics, at 2012.twitter.com. But they also shared things you didn't know, like the most retweeted posts, and teamed up with Visify for a personal look at your account's 2012 in review.
You guess something else is happening this year? It's all done in review. Adobe's updated its Creative Cloud Suite. That's its subscription-based version of Adobe Creative Suite. There are updates to Photoshop CS6 available only to Creative Cloud subscribers, like a convert to CSX exporter for Photoshop files and better 3D tools. Adobe also added a collaborative feature called Teams. So the lesson here is if you want cool stuff from Adobe first, you might want to be a subscriber.
Intel announced Monday that its 22-nanometer system on a chip technology will be ready for high-volume manufacturing in 2013. This beats Qualcomm's current 28-nanometer chips in size. Performance, however, will dictate whether it furthers Intel's goal of expanding its presence in the mobile market.
Jimmy Wales spoke at Vodafone's Mobile for Good Summit today and showed off his own personal phone. It was a 3G handset made by Huawei that he picked up from Kenya that now costs about $50. Wales said the smartphone adoption in Africa is happening faster than he realized. That adoption rate is putting that region on the Wikimedia Foundation's radar. It had previously been focusing on emerging markets like India, but it was Wales' budget Android phone that he says woke his mind up to take another look at Africa.
My mind finally woke up. It's been sleeping in. The votes are in, and 88% opposed Facebook's change to site governance, which would, among other things, eliminate votes on changes in site governance. And so, honoring the process, Facebook will likely eliminate voting on changes to site governance. Why? Well, only 668,500 of the site's users voted. Facebook required 30% of its users, which would be 300 million votes, to be cast in order to make the vote binding.
Google's continuing to streamline its Motorola Mobility division. This time, it's announced a deal where Google will sell off Motorola Mobility's Chinese and Brazilian manufacturing operations to Flextronics. The deal also includes an agreement whereby Flextronics would manufacture Android and other mobile devices for Google.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Citrix and ShareFile.com. We're all familiar with the frustrations of trying to send a big file over email and then it bounces back because they're like, that's too big. We can't take that. You're trying to send a confidential file and you're like, I don't just want to attach it in an email. I mean, that doesn't seem safe. And I just don't want to throw it anywhere on the internet where anybody can get it. Or maybe you just need a document when you're out of the office. And you know you send it to somebody, but now it's there and you don't have access to it. Well, the answer to all these problems is ShareFile by Citrix. It's the best way to send, share, and receive files of almost any size because it was designed for business. This is for business users, mind you. With ShareFile, every file stays under your control. That way you know it's secure. You know who has access to it. You know who accessed it. And you can even limit how long they have access to it, see who opens those files, when they open them, and it allows you to access the files from any computer or mobile device, no matter what industry you're in. ShareFile can be customized for your company's specific needs. We rely on ShareFile every day. It's an essential tool for what we do because you got confidential stuff. Yeah, I'm in the process of moving. There's all kinds of documents need to be moved around. I don't want to just throw them up anywhere on the internet. If you got legal contracts, you got a lot of financial information, you need a safe place to share that stuff. So try ShareFile today. Sign up with my special offer, a full 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter TNT. Remember, visit ShareFile.com and type in TNT. We thank Citrix and ShareFile for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the news of the day, Mr. Lloyd Case, senior editor at PCWorld.com. Good to have you back on the show, Lloyd.
Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. I know you're busy getting things together, like everybody else, to go off on a holiday. So I'm glad we were able to get some of your time.
Yes, it's been pretty intense, but things are starting to ramp down finally.
Well, let's start off by talking about this new Yahoo Mail. I am actually one of the Yahoo Mail users. I know people are like, nobody uses Yahoo Mail, but I still have a Yahoo account that I actually use for stuff. What did they change? I haven't seen it yet. I haven't got it.
Yeah, so far the web version of Yahoo Mail has not rolled out. It's going to be available in the next couple of days. But on the Yahoo blog, Marissa Meyer, at least it's credited to her, is announcing the brand new Yahoo Mail. It's supposed to be fast, easy, available, you know, all that PR stuff. But the app's available now. Windows 8 Store, iPhone, iPod Touch, no iPad app, and Android versions are out. And the difference is it's supposed to be faster. It's designed with speed in mind. Like when you're using the iOS app, you can swipe a message. It gives you a bunch of options like report a spam or reply. So lots of different faster ways to use it.
Wait, you mean those work? Because I can do both those things right now. So you're just saying that they're easier?
They're easier. That it's actually a lot snappier than I've seen before. On top of that, the iOS app has push notifications, so you can actually see as you're getting messages. I'm not sure if that was in the previous edition. The Android version apparently completely rewritten from the ground up. It's supposed to reduce battery drain from 20 to 40%. It's the first major redesign for Meyer's Yahoo. Lloyd, what do you think of the simultaneous rollout of applications? Because it's welcoming in all these other platforms.
I think they need to do that. I mean, if you're going to roll out something that major, if you don't roll it across all the major platforms, people, you know, you'll get complaints from the users of those particular platforms. Like Tom, I'm a Yahoo Mail user for sort of a lot of my personal email. And it's the only question I have is how many revisions of Yahoo Mail have we gone through so far? I mean, will this be, you know, the real one? But I'm looking forward to it.
You know, about a year ago, we got that big update to Yahoo Mail. And I remember they took forever to tease it and then let you in to try it if you wanted to and switch back and forth. And then finally, when it rolled out, it was a big improvement because Yahoo Mail had just kind of languored with minor tweaks, but it was still like very, very HTML4. You had to reload a lot of things, and now it's more dynamic. I have not been sitting here complaining about the Yahoo Mail interface since it launched a year ago. So this sort of like ambush of like, haha, it's now better and it's more Gmail-like. I'm a little skeptical. I'm talking about the web-based interface. I think they've made a lot of progress on the app. I'm not one who really uses apps for email all that often, although I have to say the new Gmail app has come in handy a few times because I need to search for old mail. Right. So I guess I could see that with Yahoo.
Now, one of the changes in Yahoo Mail is the fact that when you open up mail, it takes you to your inbox first. Because normally it would just show you the What's New page. That's up front. That was the default anyway. And you could hit Compose Message or see the news of the day. But you go to mail for mail. And that's one of the things that one of the Yahoo posts they were saying, we're saving you time because we're actually going to show you your email up front. I know it's a crazy idea, but that is one thing that's going to shift.
And the current Yahoo Mail is still a pretty modal interface. I mean, you have to click and tell it to do specific things that you really shouldn't have to do, that you should be able to do with things like right-click and stuff like that. So I am looking forward to changes.
Yeah, that's true. The right-clicking stuff. I think I've gotten used to it not having so many things over the years that maybe I've become a little less critical of it. But this is sort of, I mean, is this the first big Marissa Meyer Yahoo change? There's been lots of acquisitions and a lot of announcements and changes to perks and everything. But this is the first big consumer-facing change, right?
Well, yes, yeah, sort of. I mean, the apps are out there, but the website hasn't changed just yet. I mean, the web interface of Yahoo Mail. So when it comes to all the acquisitions, those have happened. But this is like the first major property for Meyer to change. So this was rumored around for a long time. And it's kind of nuts. When you go to the blog post for Yahoo, and you want to click that image for a larger image to see what the mail will look like, it doesn't get any bigger. It's this tiny image. It's one of those like cardinal sins of HTML. Like when you
to do it for the show just now, and it didn't work.
When you link to the image, it's just the same image. So you don't get to see a more detailed look. So maybe somebody out there is getting to enjoy this new flattened streamlined experience.
Wait, I don't even see that.
So,
I'm on the Yahoo Mail right now. Where am I supposed to find the link to see?
Oh, no, I'm looking at the blog post.
At the blog post. I thought, because again, a year ago or two, for like a year leading up to the launch of the new Yahoo Mail, they kept saying, take a look. Here's what it's going to look like. They did a great job, depending on how you look at it, of making sure you knew it was coming and got comfortable with it before it launched. I'm curious how this rollout's going to go.
I'm also curious if they make mail aggregation a little easier, too, like the way it works with the new Hotmail, or I should say the new Windows Mail, where you can have a lot of all your mail clients in one place.
Yeah, I love that, actually. That's really good. I do that with Gmail. I have a lot of everything but my Yahoo Mail goes into my Gmail.
Right.
Fortune's Miguel Heft interviewed Larry Page for a cover story, a wide-ranging interview that I recommend, if you've got the time, to go take a look at. Here's some of the quotes I pulled out of this. I'm going to ask you guys what impression this gives you of Larry Page. He has not done a lot of interviews. So this is one of the first times, not the very first time, but one of the first times he's really talked about his vision. A lot of people are dismissing it as just a bunch of corporate puffery. But I think there's something in here that's interesting. He said the internet was made in universities and it was designed to interoperate. The big quote that everybody's paying attention to is, I think it would be nice if everybody would get along better and the users didn't suffer as a result of other people's activities. Now, granted, this is much different than Steve Jobs saying we're going to go nuclear on them, right? I mean, but it also doesn't mean anything. It could be just him trying to make himself have a nice guy image. He goes on to say, we want to do things that will motivate the most amazing people in the world to want to work on them. In other words, not just the consumers, but the people that work at Google. Our job is to think of the thing you haven't thought of yet that you really need. If you look at a product and you say the day it launched, it's not doing what I think it should do, we say, well, yeah, it just launched today. I think for us, our strength comes from working with everybody, but we also need to make sure we're serving our end users with a really great experience and that we provide that detailed information to people. Sometimes those things will be complicated. So all of this is building up a picture of Larry Page's mindset to me. And these are the key quotes here. What I'm trying to do is to get a technology company that continues to scale its impact and aspirations in its everyday. We're at a certain scale now, but I don't see any particular reason why we shouldn't be much bigger, more impactful than we are now. Part of what I'm trying to do is take Google as a case study and really scale our ambition such that we are able to cause more positive change in the world and more technological change. I have a deep feeling that we are not even close to where we should be. So reading through this entire interview, and I just pulled out selected quotes here, I feel like Page came off in these excerpts as someone who doesn't want to get distracted by what the competition is doing. He said that over and over. We don't look at what the competition is doing. We look at what we're doing. And he wants to super serve the user, even with things the user doesn't know they want. And there's a little Jobsian there of saying, like, we're going to focus on what people use it for, and we will try to anticipate what they want, not just ask them what they want. Go ahead, Lloyd.
You know, it really sounds like also is the really old school Hewlett Packard from way back in the day before even I worked there, when, you know, Hewlett and Packard would walk around and say things like, okay, so what's the guy on the next bench really want? And they would sort of iterate and improve the stuff that they really want to do. The pocket calculator came back about because Hewlett wanted one for himself, not necessarily because he thought it'd be a great thing for other customers. And so this sounds a little bit like that kind of talk as well.
That's what I was looking at too, Lloyd. When Paige and Brynn were doing Google or starting it up, it's like they wanted something that they wanted to use because the things out there weren't good enough as far as they were concerned. And when you start thinking about yourself as the actual client, it changes the way you worry about things. Instead of going focus group, focus group, focus group, and you end up with this like compromised product, I think Paige is aware that at the top, he can make the company as nimble as he wants it. Even though they're gigantic, they can still do moves and things that impact everybody because whether they wanted to or not, they're like the default search engine for like the world, effectively. They're indexing all this information. Now they have a real chance to decide how people get to use that and what they get to see.
Now, one thing we didn't hear them talk about at all is the, you know, do no evil thing. He talked more about helping the world, making an impact on the world. There's a little bit of arrogance here, especially when they asked him about competition, to say like, we love to work with people, but we don't really pay attention to what they're doing. We pay attention to what we're doing. Do you buy that, Lloyd?
I think it's a really good attitude when you're on top, but that also lends you to a certain myopia so that when somebody does something really cool, you may be completely blindsided by it. So that's the danger of thinking like that.
I do think that you do. I think Larry Page is really honestly trying to give you a slice of his brain here, and there's something to be learned from it. I think it's easy to dismiss all of these individual statements as like, well, of course he wants to say that. It sounds good. But if you read a lot of CEO interviews, they don't all say things the way he says them. And if you read through this, it starts to build up a picture of a CEO who, to me, and full disclosure, my wife works for the company, but to me, what it sounds like is he wants to make Google something that no one's ever done before, which is huge, life-changing, which is actually something Steve Jobs wanted to do with Apple, but also nimble and user-focused. And he thinks he's the guy to do it.
I just love that. Go ahead, Lloyd.
I also think that it's really coming out of his head and not projecting the corporate message. Right. So unlike a lot of CEOs would just always be on message, and it didn't come off as being somebody who's on message, or at least not on a corporate message. It's his personal vision.
Yeah, it didn't read like a press release.
I just love the idea of never focusing on the competition or not looking at them necessarily. It's like the New York Yankees approach to baseball. It's like, I don't care what you do. We're not going to get players to stop them from going to you. We're going to attract the best players. We're going to have the biggest market. You guys come here. We'll worry about winning every single year. Because when you start worrying about everybody else, Baltimore Orioles, you make a mistake. All the time. So wow. I like this approach because I'm a sports fan.
Yeah. and I think what it shows is that a lot of these antitrust situations that they get into where they appear dismissive and are like, well, you don't understand what we're doing, is because of this internal focus. Because people don't understand what they're doing. It doesn't mean that I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying that there's a breakdown in communication between the way people inside Google look at the universe and the way everyone else looks at the universe. All right, let's talk about Facebook's war on democracy.
Well, yeah.
Is that overstating it?
Well, that's one way to put it. I mean, it's the same kind of thing with Paige is talking about, right? Just worry about it at the top. Don't think about the users here. So the voting time is over at Facebook. 588,000 votes opposed the changes to Facebook's policies. Like you were saying, Tom, they needed 30% for the voting to continue. They only needed 300 million people, right? So they just fell short by what, 299 million people.
Out of almost a billion people, they just needed a third.
Yeah, that's all they needed, but they couldn't get that. But it's the largest turnout in Facebook voting ever. The previous was in...
Not even a million, though.
No. Previous high was April 2009 when 665,000 voted. This time, 668,000 voted. But that means that here are the changes that are actually going to happen. Facebook can intermingle data with its affiliates, which means any Instagram user...
Well, they haven't actually announced their decision yet, have they?
Oh, well,
They will take this vote into consideration and announce their decision tomorrow, I think.
Thank you for adding that point. What would happen if this all the changes go through? As Facebook can intermingle data with its affiliates, any Instagram user that also has a Facebook account could have their personal Facebook data used to target them with ads on Instagram. And of course, if this goes through, Facebook users can't vote directly anymore, but they can submit questions to Chief Privacy Officer Aaron Egan if they want to. So I guess they will still have somewhat of a voice. But Lloyd, do you think that removing the whole voting aspect, does it really make a difference? Does it make Facebook look evil? Or is it just something that was a nice extra that they allowed before, but it didn't look like people were using it?
Well, you have to remember Facebook's history. It started as a thing for colleges and high schools only, remember, originally. And so the whole getting the people to participate thing was really important to that audience. I think it's sort of telling that probably a lot of Facebook users today didn't even know there was a vote. So I think that it's not really that relevant, and it's not going to have a huge impact in the long run with what Facebook wanted to do anyway.
You know, the one mistake they might make, just to play devil's advocate, is they had an 88% opposition of the, you know, very small percentage of users that did vote. Now, I'm not going to argue that that's some kind of scientifically representative sample, but that is an extraordinarily high percentage of people motivated to oppose this. So if they're making a mistake here, it's that they're not doing enough to pacify the hardcore Facebook users who are really focused on the importance of privacy. And they may need to do a little more when they roll this out to mollify those people.
Yeah, it's strange. Considering people say they didn't really know much about this, there were emails from Facebook. But since Facebook is a social network, if we got these, you know, 500,000 people who are opposed to it, couldn't they have spread their message through something like Facebook?
Look at Wikipedia, man. You cannot go to that site without knowing they need money, right?
Right.
Facebook
right.
could have done the same thing. You need to vote on this. It's important.
Well,
they didn't do that.
The you need to vote versus you can vote seems a little different.
Well, what Facebook did is they sent an email. You know how great people are at reading their email and responding to it, especially when it comes from
something
they subscribe,
right.
not instead from an actual person.
Instead of sending an actual Facebook message, right?
Yeah.
Which people would respond to.
Maybe they would.
The other danger, though, is that so you have this really hardcore people who care about this. If you recall what happened to which site was that? Not Reddit, but the other one, Dig, when they had this hardcore users that basically dominated what Dig did, and it kind of killed them in the long run.
Sure. No, that is the danger of over-focusing on those.
Yeah, you don't want to listen to the less than 1%, do you?
But, well, it depends on how powerful they are, right?
Very
powerful. In so many situations. let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. It's reliable. It's not only fast and easy to use. They've got this beautiful 100% drag-and-drop functionality and a new page builder tool called Layout Engine that enables you to customize pages in seconds. But it's exceptionally reliable. I have a Squarespace site. I also have other sites. I have no end of hassle with my other sites when they get popular because I get these notices, oh, you're using up RAM now, and you know, you're going to have to allocate more resources and reboot your server. You don't get that with Squarespace. Squarespace, you either pay for a limited account or you pay for an unlimited account. You decide right off the bat, and you can always upgrade later on. It's going to give you domains, design, development, hosting, and customer support all in one easy package. So go try it out for free. Go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. You don't need to give them a credit card or any kind of information other than an email address where they can get in touch with you and start building your website. If you decide to purchase this, use the offer code TNT12 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT12. Give it a try. Everything you need to create an exceptional website at squarespace.com. IDC has a new market share report out. You know, we've talked a lot about how there's the market share report for phones, and then there's one for computers, and the post-PC era, should tablets count as computers, and aren't smartphones really just small computers? Well, IDC has a market share report that combines PCs, tablets, and phones. They call it the Smart Connected Devices Market. To try to say, okay, well, what if we just lump it all together? What does that market look like? Well, Samsung leads the way, followed by Apple, with Lenovo trailing third, and then kind of falls off a cliff to HP, Sony, and everybody else is gathered together under other. So Samsung has 21.8% of the market in Q3, Apple 15.1%, Lenovo 7%, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, in 2011... because they also break it down by type, right? In 2011, PCs accounted for 39% of the market share. IDC estimates by 2016 that'll fall to less than 20%, 19.9%. Smartphones in 2011, 53.1%, up to 66.7% in this current report. And tablets, 7.7% in 2011 to 13.4% in 2016. So looking at this market share report, I think those numbers I just gave you. Yeah, there we go. That's the right one. Lloyd, is this a valuable way of looking at the market, or the fact that 2/3 of this is smartphones just kind of wash it all out?
I think it's an interesting way to look at it, but I think I have a couple of problems with this. First of all, smartphones. a large majority, I don't know if it's majority, a large number of people buy cheap Android phones and use them as phones. So is that a smartphone that's connected to the internet if it's never used as an internet device? I can't answer that question. I don't know if that qualifies, and how do you separate that out if it doesn't? The other thing is the tablet market's getting very blurry. So if I have this Windows 8 Clover Trail thing, is that a tablet or is that a laptop? You know, there are all these little hybrid devices now. So I think that where you draw the line is also going to affect the numbers to some extent.
I like the idea, though, that they're saying, let's where those lines are blurry, let's take a longer view and say, let's just back up where the lines don't matter anymore. But then it does seem like, well, Samsung and Apple are leading this, of course, because they make smartphones, and smartphones right. are cheaper, and they sell in larger amounts.
Yeah, but the other companies, right. Lenovo, HP, Sony, they've all tried their hand, and Lenovo's still making phones. But HP tried this, and it didn't really work for them. Sony had Sony Ericsson. They have their Sony line of phones. It's not like these players aren't in the game. They're just not as successful as Samsung and Apple when it comes to this. I mean, Motorola's not even on this because all they're doing, they don't have laptops. They just have phones and tablets, I guess. So the thing is, how are people really connecting? To a lot of people, phones are that this is their primary device for the internet. And they would not know what to do without one of these things. So I think it's actually more of a fuller view of how people are actually using technology in general. Because if we tried that blurry line test where it's, okay, do you have a hinge or not because you have a tablet or not? I think that's it's a really strange thing, especially with the very strange form factors that are coming out now.
And the other issue is that I have with this is that notice the game consoles are missing from this picture. There are a lot of Xbox 360s and PS3s that are connected to the internet that are used for internet services, not necessarily play games.
And they're smart connected devices, right?
Right, right.
Where do you draw the line? Fridges? That have internet connectivity?
Yeah.
Where's the line, Tom?
Well, exactly. Where is the line? Because if Valve comes out with a Steam Box platform, whether it's the one that Valve makes or not, and you put that in your home theater, that's going to count as a PC under this, right? Because it's either going to run Linux or Windows. But why does that count and the Xbox doesn't? That's a great point. Now, yeah, the refrigerator example is pertinent because it's like, well, it's a hold on. You know, that is a different animal, but you do have to get in to an argument about definition. But I think what IDC is doing here that's smart is saying this isn't the only market share report we're ever going to put out. But if you want to see what happens when you combine them all together, I guess the thing to take out of this is smartphones are dominating as far as market share goes. And that is the world we live in. You know, and we've been getting people complaining to the email address here saying, you guys don't need to ever talk about smartphones anymore. Why don't you talk about computers? This is an indication of why that is, right?
Tiny computers. They snuck it in. That was the weird thing. When I saw the iPhone the first time, or the Trios, I'm like, they're sneaking a computer in your pocket. This is brand new. Because we used to have these really interesting, they were phones. They were actually phones before. And they're like, they were camera phones. They had this little added functionality. But once you started having office editing applications and things like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're finally getting there. And now computers are in your pockets.
And they had a huge impact in other markets too. Like, for example, my wife upgraded her phone to an iPhone 5 recently, and she said, so does that mean I don't need to carry my camera around? I said, absolutely. You don't need that little point and shoot anymore.
Yeah.
And so that market's being affected. And the interesting side note to that is that the average price of cameras has gone up in the last year because the only cameras people are really buying are the higher end cameras now.
Because if you're serious about photography, then that camera in your pocket obviously is not good enough, a phone camera. But otherwise, you know, for just people who just want to take snapshots, it's fine. People like me, you know, I'm not that great at photography. I never pretend to, but I like to take a snapshot every once in a while. That's all I need. And single-purpose devices always fall off. We saw it with PDAs, or not single-purpose, but limited-purpose. E-books, they're predicting they're going to fall off the cliff next year. E-book readers that just do e-books. I'm not talking about the Kindle Fire or Nexus 7s or stuff like that. It may be that PCs are starting to fall into that area of like, well, they don't do as much. They can't go places. They can't make calls. Well, they can make calls, but they're not cell phones.
I am going to argue that e-book readers are slightly different in because a couple of things. First of all, the tremendously long battery life affects a lot of users, and there are quite a few users. It's interesting. One breakdown I saw of Kindle users, for example, is that a large percentage of them are middle-aged women who don't necessarily use computers and other very, very often. So it's kind of a different animal in some respects.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to die, but they are predicting that the sales of them will decline as people start to use other things for, right, for e-readers. This means that, of course, that everybody wants a chunk of all the money that's flowing through all those mobile devices, and we got a brewing fight between Microsoft and Apple about just that thing.
Yes, more details on the next web report I talked about. Microsoft and Apple butting heads over SkyDrive. Apple wants 30% of the in-app revenues. Now, Microsoft rolled out the ability for SkyDrive users to purchase more storage while it already had a SkyDrive iOS app. That's why that app is still around. Microsoft won't update the SkyDrive app because it's trying to negotiate with Apple. They don't want to give, obviously, this much money because this is a perpetual thing. So if people subscribe through the iOS app and then they move to Android, well, Microsoft still has to pay a cut. So it's driving them a little nuts that way. And this also means that third-party applications that use SkyDrive are being phased out. The Cloud Music for SkyDrive app, which uses Live Connect's SDK, was rejected by Apple's review team, saying that the login interface must be native and not a link or a web view, because it would take you out of that application to a website which allowed you to sign up for SkyDrive. So there's this big squabble going on. Assuming all of this is true, who should bend? Should Apple bend to Microsoft here so they have great Microsoft SkyDrive applications, or should Microsoft try to get on iOS? Where do you think this should go, Lloyd?
Well, I think one of the interesting aspects, for example, of the Microsoft Store is that Microsoft allows third-party payment, which Apple doesn't right now, right? So I think that Apple or Microsoft is probably trying to convince Apple that they should adopt that model because, of course, it would benefit Microsoft. I think it would benefit the ecosystem as a whole. I think Apple's kind of getting the rap as being kind of the bad guy here, not just in this case, but a lot of developers are looking at it and realizing that Apple is closing their ecosystem tighter and tighter. And what is that going to mean in the long run?
And this is what Larry Page was talking about when he's talking about we used to all work together on the internet and now we're building these silos. Apple is being really pedantic about this sort of thing. Oh, well, you can go from your app to the web, and on the web, you're asking people for money. So we need a cut of that. It's just ridiculous. And right, what they're doing, this policy that Apple puts in place, actually reduces the usability of my iPhone and my iPad. If I'm in the Audible app and I have to go launch Safari to go buy an Audible book because Apple wants to take 30% of every one of those, that's just ridiculous. Apple needs to modify this to be more reasonable. It just doesn't make sense. I understand that they don't want people getting around the rule and doing sneaky ways to do in-app payments, but that's not what's going on here. This is an entirely different thing. It's not an in-app payment.
And in the same report, they said that Microsoft offered to remove all subscription options from its application, leaving it a non-revenue generating experience. And Apple said, no, that's not going to work for us either. So Apple wants a cut of this. So either Apple thinks that it's going to make them a lot of money, or they're just really being jerks about this like they were with Amazon. They did not allow the Kindle app to have a link out.
Same thing,
it
right?
Just, it, like you're saying, Tom, it does mess up your experience because you get unlimited functionality because Apple wants a cut. Why can't I just use this application the way I want?
And I don't think they're being jerks. I actually think that they have a right to say, oh, yeah, if you've got an app and you're gonna charge people for stuff, you know, we want to run it so that all of your in-app purchases go through us. And if we're going to provide that payment system, then we're going to take 30% of that. But that's not what's going on in these cases like the Kindle and like the SkyDrive. They're not doing that game where you're buying $100 so you can get some stuff in the game and then trying to find a sneaky way around that.
You know, this would also explain all those rumors of Microsoft Office coming to iOS or iPads and why it's being held up.
Yeah,
because
sure,
it's got tons of SkyDrive integration. If this is one of these points that has been fighting back and forth, Microsoft's probably just holding on, saying, look, we can give you Office if you stop this ridiculous kind of negotiation.
Yeah, if any upgrade that I buy to Office or if I have one of those Office subscriptions that they have now, mm-hmm, suddenly Apple has to take 30% of it, forget it. No, Microsoft's not going to do that. Well, let's finish up our discussion section with a look at 2012. Yes, it's not over yet. And yes, my Visify link only goes back to July. But 2012.twitter.com. Allows you to look back at all of the golden tweets. Did you know the golden tweets are the two most popular retweeted posts? One is the victory post from President Barack Obama after he won the election. It's the famous picture of him hugging Michelle from earlier in the day. And then the number two was actually a very touching post from Justin Bieber that I wasn't aware of. A 6-year-old girl who was suffering from brain cancer, died. And it kind of tears me up to even talk about it. R.I.P. Avalana, I love you. Retweeted 220,000 times, favorited 100,000 times. Then you go down and it's, you know, curse words. Don't. Because it's somebody saying, F it, NFL, find me. And then we get into Team GB from the Olympics, and it is an interesting slice. When I first looked at this, I got all like, oh yeah, so the Olympics happened. I remember. You don't need to tell me. But there's some cool stuff in here. Lloyd, do you like this kind of year-end review stuff?
I go through this exercise every year, either internally or sometimes write articles about it. So it's kind of fun to look at. It's interesting to look at it from the Twitter perspective, though, because it's all these short, pithy comments. So it's easy to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially with tools like Visify, so you can go back. And what was it, your comment about Twitter is going to actually make this available too? They're going to show their end of the year roundup stuff?
This is the Twitter one. 2012.twitter.com. Yeah.
Right. So that's fun to look at. But I think there's a lot more that happened that wasn't necessarily on Twitter. That's important in the world of tech. But
yeah, it's one perspective on it. That's for sure. I think it is cool that they partnered up with Visify, VIZIFY.com. You put in your username, and they'll give you your golden tweet, the one that was retweeted the most times that you posted, and your golden follower, and what are the things you tend to tweet the most often. My golden tweet was a man just jumped out of space and landed on his feet from the space
that
jump.
Didn't happen.
It totally happened on October 14th. But what's funny is that even though Twitter partnered with Visify, and Twitter in its blog post about this promoted Visify, Visify says Twitter only lets us analyze your last 3,200 tweets, so we can only go back to July 2012. So Twitter isn't letting Visify use its full API. Not much of a partnership there.
I'm just looking at this, and there's something Lloyd said sparked something in my head. When it comes to, this isn't just necessarily the stuff that happened in tech. Twitter wants to position this as, this is the way the world was during the year, because everybody uses Twitter. It just seems like this big PR thing of, hey, next year our partners will include Disney and this other company, like these monstrously large conglomerates, because that's been the shift for Twitter. It used to be this kind of echo chamber of people talking. Now it's become a bit more corporate. There's a lot more. A lot more companies are taking it seriously, obviously, as a delivery mechanism. So if Twitter can go, hey, look, this is how people saw the world through Twitter, join us up next year in 2013 because we want to do more.
Yeah, if you look at their new voices section, that's where what you're talking about comes through very clearly. They're highlighting people who joined Twitter. Now, these are not you and me. These are not regular people. These are Matt Lauer, Steve Carell, Betty White, Patrick Stewart, right? These are famous people or influential people. Jeremy Clarkson just joined. I had no idea.
Now I can follow all of them. Ringo Starr.
How many of these do you follow? I follow four, three, two. Two?
Oh, does it actually say two. Following if you're following them?
Yeah, the follow button grays out.
Oh, then I have
if you're,
following
if
none of these people.
In. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
I love a good invisibility story, believe me. And from our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, Mail Online reports that the camouflage fabric that can make soldiers invisible is coming, and a company claims it has Pentagon backing for the material. Bends the light around its wearers. We've been following this story since Buzz Out Loud days of light bending around you to make you invisible. And the U.S. Military is apparently backing quantum stealth camouflage material so that it can wrap up a soldier in it. And it's the Harry Potter invisibility cloak.
I love the caption of the picture. Awesome. It says the future of camouflage. It's a mock-up. These photos are to show the media the concept, adding that for security issues, it cannot show the technology in action. This is a great idea. You can't ever show your product because it makes you invisible in the first place. But we'll kind of come up with something like a lady in a blanket underneath. Maybe it kind of looks like how it works.
The thing is, this has been the concept for years and years and years, right? They're not showing me anything I haven't seen before. I want to see the thing in action. Security issues, my foot. They haven't got it working. That's why they can't do that. Just saying. Let me see it in action. Picture, like real pics, not photoshopped pics.
But if it works, you won't see
it. Right. Pics of the thing
you can have, if like it works like that, you put the blanket over somebody's head and then you see their head. It would work exactly. If it worked, that picture would show it working.
We're going to need like a thermal imaging camera with the other camera and all these other views. Maybe Make sure it works.
All right. It's Iaz's turn to do the calendar in Sarah's absence. What's on the calendar, Iaz?
I'm going to take a look at the calendar. In 1972, Apollo 17 became the sixth and last Apollo mission to land on the moon. That's a long time ago. Tomorrow, December 12th, is the day the Pope will start tweeting, if you want to start following him. It's true, though. I'm not making this up. At Pontifex.
He's tweeted before, but only from the official Vatican account.
And also tomorrow, the New York Times Deal Book Conference kicks off in New York City. Confirmed speakers include little-known people like Eric Schmidt, Dick Costolo, and Mark Andreessen. So they just landed up some just random people.
Mark Andreessen, did he go to the moon or did he invent mosaic?
Mosaic.
Yeah. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a caller with a perspective on that NBC Yahoo Sports deal we were talking about yesterday. Take it away, caller.
I hate new SoundCloud.
I was trying to give you extra.
This is Justin Y from Oakland, California. About your Yahoo NBC News partnership story, this is what it's all about. For NBC, it's taking down ESPN. ESPN is the 700-pound gorilla. And NBC now has the rebranded NBC Sports Network. The two things that Yahoo has that ESPN is currently very, very weak in is original sports reporting, which Yahoo's been very good at in terms of breaking stuff, specifically college football scandal stories, and it has excellent baseball reporting, and fantasy. Fantasy is the huge emerging market for online sports stuff. Yahoo is great at it. ESPN is good, but all of a sudden, if NBC Sports Network can align themselves with those two elements and then add a football package, they're a credible contender to ESPN. Love the show.
That's Justin Robert Young, wasn't it?
I believe so. But I think he made a valuable point when it came to the NBC Yahoo deal that I can't believe we didn't mention ESPN being this giant in the field.
You know,
what's interesting
is ESPN, part of Disney, so part of Go.com, which isn't really a thing anymore.
Oh, yeah.
But they have not had to partner with people. In fact, they used to have fantasy partners, and then they started rolling their own. Didn't they used to partner with Yahoo for fantasy stuff?
Which place?
Like ESPN, yeah.
I thought they worked with CBS Sports. I might be mixing them up.
They might have been working with Commissioner.com back in the day. But anyway, ESPN has become a juggernaut on the web. That's an incredible point. And yeah, what Yahoo's getting here is some of those Yahoo Sports writers. This is a match made in heaven in a way because the weaknesses of one are covered by the other. Thanks for calling, Justin in Oakland. Let's move on to some emails.
We got an email from George, AT&T crew. I was listening to episode 645 where you guys were talking about images on contact lenses. I've got a few ideas of possible uses for this. One use is displaying crisscross lines so that less light gets into the eye, thereby providing an instant shade. No more need for any sunglasses. You can easily turn them on and off by showing or not showing images. Or better yet, think of active shutter 3D glasses. The other use is to show really bright images on the contact, pointing outward, thereby providing an instant flashlight so you can see in front of you in the dark. Of course, this would require too much electricity and probably burn a hole in your eye. So much for good ideas. Love the show.
Did you see this, Lloyd? The contact lenses, it's got an LCD screen on the contact lens, so it can actually display an image, and you can see it looking at the person, but they haven't figured out how to focus the image into your eye. That's kind of the next step for them. So we were trying to figure out, like, okay, what other things besides cosmetic can it be used for? I like the sunglasses idea.
The 3D glasses. I want to put glasses over my glasses.
Yeah, it could do all kinds of things like that. Finally, Joe from Omaha, Nebraska, wanted to add to our discussion about the state of fiber being rolled out. He says in Omaha, CenturyLink is in process of doing a fiber to the home project. They're adding to an existing fiber project that US West put fiber to the ped, meaning to the sidewalk, about 15 years ago. It is said that when turned on, it will have low end speeds of 40 megabits per second and top out at over 100 megabits per second. So it's not the fastest that I've ever heard of, but capabilities probably higher than that. Joe says, I found it interesting when it was said that no one could make this work when it was going on in my backyard. It is my hope that Google's fiber project has made all the telcos rethink their stances on high-speed internet, as in something faster than 7 to 27 megabits per second. You know, there are a lot of little projects like this going on all over the place, and that's the problem. There's a lot of little projects. If we had enough little projects, then maybe that would make the difference.
And there's a fair amount of fiber that was laid back in the day when those companies went bankrupt after the dot-com crisis, if you remember. And so there's actually unused fiber in a lot of places that people may not even realize is there that they could dig up and use and connect to. It's kind of
interesting. Yeah, you know, Joe actually had in a longer they had a longer email than the part we read, and he mentioned that you used to have to put in a conduit when you laid your own fiber for someone else to use, and then with deregulation, the companies. There was a federal court case that said if you lay that second conduit, you have to open it up for other people to use. So they stopped doing it.
Right.
So there's all kinds of complications in the way this has been done. It has been mismanaged and it's done everything except get consumers what they want, which is we have the technology to deliver 300 megabits per second to your home. And we've had it for a decade now, and we can't seem to figure out how to make it work.
And one of the complaints for the Verizon stated was that their shareholders didn't like what was going on. Maybe you need a small company like an Omaha CenturyLink, something like this, that they are only focused on this and not worried about wireless, mobile, any of this other stuff. Maybe this is the kind of way to go.
Well, but then you have the Time Warners of the world going around in North Carolina stopping municipalities who put it together and say, we'd like to roll out fiber, right? Mm-hmm. There's great examples in Tennessee of communities who funded fiber rollout and then opened it up to competition, and they've got amazing internet. But then that gets clamped down on. They're like, that's anti-competition. Well, what competition seems to have gotten us so far is nothing, which is because it's not actually competition.
Right, so democracy failed. Facebook's got it on the nose.
Facebook's got it right. All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. If you'd like to submit a story for consideration on the show, go to technewstoday.reddit.com and do it. Also, don't forget about our open mic episode. It's going to record Monday, December 17th at 9 a.m. Pacific time. If you would like to be on that show as one of our guests, we bring people from the audience, from the community onto the show. The deadline to submit is this Thursday, December 13th. Email tnt@twit.tv with the subject line Open Mic 2012. Let us know who you are, what you do, and why you would like to take part, and then watch on Monday, December 17th at 9 a.m. Pacific for
as
that
we
show.
We recorded then. Yeah.
Live.
Right.
Yeah. Watch it live while we're doing it
there
at 9
go.
a.m. That's why I gave the time. And then it will, of course, be available on demand in that holiday break week. Lloyd Case, thank you so much for joining us, man.
My pleasure, as always.
PCWorld.com. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything in particular going on?
Nope. Well, you know, CES is coming up, and we'll have a lot of coverage from there, and I'll be there wandering around talking to PC people, the few that are left.
And follow him at Lloyd Case. That's 1-L-O-Y-D-C-A-S-E. That's it for us. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, like Justin Robert Young did at 260-TNT-SHOW. Molly Wood joins us tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. We'll see you then. Tomorrow.